From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 25th day of June, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. And a bit later in the program, Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net will be joining us to discuss how things are going down on the farm in Windsor, Illinois. We'll also take up all those basis contracts that are likely to have to be rolled or sold by the end of the week. And we'll take up the weather forecast, too, that with Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the numbers as they finished up in Chicago. July corn today down 7 cents at $3.17 and a quarter. December 3.28, 5 3/4 lower, and the March contract down 5 1/4 at $3.39 and a half. May corn 4 1/4 lower, $3.47 and a quarter. Soybeans July contract down 1 1/2, $8.69 and a quarter the settlement price. The November at $8.68 and a quarter down 1 3/4, and January new crop down 2 3/4 at $8.71. The March at $8.67 and a half cent down 3 cents for the day. Bean oil futures off 11 cents at $27.54. The bean meal at $285.50 down $1.20. Wheat futures July contract soft red at $4.86 and 3/4 up 5 1/2 cents. And the hard red July at $4.29 and 3/4 a penny and a half higher. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the nearby contract June at $94.17 and a half up 87 1/2 cents. August down 27 1/2 at $96.07 and a half cents. Feeder cattle August 133.25 for 100 pounds up 37 1/2 cents, and lean hogs on the day at 46.92 1/2 up a dollar even. Crude oil futures 66 cents a barrel higher. Ethanol futures down 14 9/10 of a cent, and gasoline on the RBOB just about 1/10 of a cent lower at $1.19 and 6/10 of a cent. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to take a look at what happened in Chicago, talk about the marketplace going forward through the summer months as well. But I suppose, Dan, let's hear first about what the weather has been like in your part of the world.
Well, we're warm, but for this time of year, we're probably below average. This is the time of year that we start bumping the upper 90s to the 102, 103 range. And now earlier this week, we were right up against the 100 mark, but we're a little cooler after I had a cold front come through and give us some pretty good rains. Other than that, is I would say we're probably a little bit below average on temps, and but it's Texas, and you have to prepare for some 100-degree heat one of these days.
We're coming up on the end of the month of June, and there are a lot of basis contracts that need to be rolled or sold. Producers will have to do that probably by the end of the week. Maybe they'll get a few more days than that. And that's been putting some pressure on the marketplace in Chicago, along with the resurgence of COVID-19. How do you see the rest of this week playing out?
Well, the commodity markets, I think we talked about this last week, is, you know, we were going through the first day of summer, the weekend of the first day of summer, and the weather pattern basically flipped to the favorable side. We got some pretty good rains in the Corn Belt. And I think it's kind of like, you know, a normal seasonal pattern here. I'm a little nervous because we did get the rain pattern. We got more rain in the forecast, at least at the moment. Nobody's talking about any threatening weather. And from what I'm hearing, what the crop looks like, everybody's feeling fairly comfortable at this point on crop prospects. So I think that's probably triggering more downward pressure, especially in the corn market, because the balance sheet really looks bad in corn if we would have above average yield, even though we may lose a couple million acres. It looks like the trade's kind of thinking that we could lose a couple million acres. From the March report, I guess we'll find that out next week, whether or not that's true or not. But even with a couple million acres less than what the report suggested, we would have an adequate supply of corn. And I think that's where corn's in problems. You know, the exports Sales today pretty well across the board kind of came into the mid-range. So the demand factor is not very supportive. And we've known all along that if we were ever going to get this market to rally significantly, it was going to have to come from adverse weather pattern, and that's just not in play right now. So I think that's probably a big thing. As far as this resurgence of COVID-19, I guess I'm in the middle of it. Texas, everybody's scratching their head what's happening to COVID-19. There's a lot of theories going around that actually the air conditioning units in these big office complexes is spreading the COVID-19 more so than anything, because that's where everybody's at nowadays, is in their offices, air-conditioned offices. So I wish we would find out, but we do have a bubble up in case numbers, mostly in the inner cities, the bigger cities, the rural areas. But even the Waco here, we had a little bubble up this past week. And that's worrisome, I think, to the economy. The Texas governor came out today, said he's going to put the opening up of Texas on hold, but we're pretty well open already. So there's just a few things he's going to hold up on. I think it's non-elective surgeries to kind of make sure that the hospital beds are there in case we would need it in some of the areas that are bubbling up. But we'll have to see how that plays. I'm not really too concerned about it at this point, but it's something definitely to watch anyway, if that would have another economic blast to the economy that's already struggling to try to recover.
Yeah, it'll be something to watch and see whether Florida, Texas, California decide to lock down. I think something like 40% of gasoline usage, I can't remember whether it's that high in those three states. Maybe that seems like an awful lot of gasoline usage. I don't know. But
you're talking about three big states, though. You're talking about three big states. They're in the top five, those three states. I know Texas uses a lot of gas because everything's pickup trucks and SUVs, full-size SUVs down here. Yeah, you get run over if you're in a compact SUV down here pretty quick.
It's about the number of gallons of ethanol that go along with the number of gallons of gasoline. So, but we'll know more of that as we get through the next couple of weeks and see how governors react in those states, and more importantly, what people do, and whether they stop driving again. So we'll find that out. As you look forward into the summer months, anything to think about as it relates to either marketing corn or soybeans?
Not any different than what I've been thinking. I mean, my cyclical work still keeps the window open for price strength, you know, late summer, early fall. It may be more of a sideways type price action. I do know, you know, the rains have got crops looking good right now, but we haven't really entered the real critical area of pollination and ear filling for corn and pod blooming for soybeans. So we still have a lot of weather ahead of us that could flip around on us, but at least at the moment it's generally favorable. I'm still thinking the weakness of the dollar will keep us at least competitive in the world market as far as exports. But we just have too much supply, at least at the moment, to get any traders excited about any kind of pickup move in corn and soybeans. For those people that have those basis contracts, that's tricky. You just keep digging a deeper hole. I guess I would take a look at, you know, maybe using a recovery off of today's bounce. It kind of looks like we, in the intraday chart, that we did come off of the lows pretty good. We might get a little short covering going into the report. Maybe use that as an opportunity to price it out and replace it with like a call option, so you don't really have, at least you have a definable downside price risk using a call option type strategy at this point.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us for the day, and we'll talk with you again next week.
Very well, Todd.
That is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Well, earlier today, I watched the Illinois Sustainable Ag Partnership webinar that we spoke of yesterday with Gary Schnittke. It was focused on no-till and cover crops in particular. It was a really good webinar, especially on the production side with Carl Zimmerman, a farmer from Northern Illinois. Martin Barbary, who's the administrator of the RMA, the Risk Management Agency from USDA. Those are the folks at USDA that handle the crop insurance program. And he was asked about the program and how it deals with cover crops. Here was his answer, and there's an important note at the end.
You know, one of the things that's often been taken as a misconception, it was more based on our cover crop termination guidelines, but there's been a misconception that the Risk Management Agency was somewhat against cover. That's not the case at all. We just want to make sure our rates are correct. We work very hard to do that. Our actuarial team run by Dr. Tom Worth, and he will look you straight in the eye and say, we want to make sure our rates are correct. So it's, you know, it's important to note. And one of the things that I think is also a misconception people don't understand is a producer's own production history. It's reflected in the insurance premium and the guarantees he gets.
Martin Barbary is the administrator for the Risk Management Agency. The important note at the end of his soundbite was that crop insurance is based on the farmer's own production practices, and the less volatile those can be year in and year out as it relates to yield and sometimes no-till and cover crops can manage to keep things in a tighter range, the cheaper those insurance rates will become over time. On this Thursday afternoon, we'll record our Commodity Week program for air tomorrow on our home station, many of these radio stations over the weekend. Our panelists will include Joe Vaklavic from Standard Grain, AgMarket.net's Matt Bennett, and from Risk Management Commodities, Chuck Shelby. You can always hear that program up on our website. Tonight, it'll be there after 6 o'clock at willag.org, willag.org. And like all of the rest of the programming, if you search for Commodity Week or the Closing Market Report, you'll find both of them as podcasts in places like NPR One, along with Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and so many more. Thanks so much for spending your time with us here at Illinois Public Media, where it is public radio for the farming world. On this Thursday, let's check out the weather forecast with Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks so much for being with us. Why don't you start with the near-term forecast to begin with. There's a change coming in the weather. It's going to get a lot more muggy, I suppose. Does that mean we're also going to get rainfall?
Well, in the near term, we certainly will. There's a cool front approaching us from the west today, and that's initially turning winds in from the south. That's pulling in warmer and muggier air. And that's why it's going to be a lot warmer as we move later on into today, tonight, and especially tomorrow. Now, eventually that front will reach the Corn Belt. And that takes place tonight, tomorrow, and then tomorrow night. And that will set the stage for some thunderstorms. Some of those storms will be a little bit on the heavy side in parts of Iowa, Illinois, and Indiana. And parts of the Corn Belt still need more rain. I know we've seen a lot of rain over the last 7 to 10 days, but if you look at the coverage of 14-day dryness on U.S. corn and soybean production, it's still pretty high, including about half of the United States crop. And most of that dryness is centered on Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, and then scattered in parts of the plains from western Minnesota southward through Nebraska and Kansas. So we have some rain on the way. We're looking for a half of an inch to 1.5 inches over the next 3 to 4 days across the Corn Belt. So that will take a little bit of pressure off of the dryness, but then we start to get into next week, and that's where we have to start thinking about the next set of weather issues.
And what are those?
Well, the forecast next week is quite complex. It's one of the more uncertain periods that we've dealt with in a while, and it's basically because of three different things that are taking place. Number one, we have a system out in the Pacific Northwest that's essentially going to linger near the Seattle area next week. That will turn winds in from the south across a big chunk of the central U.S. So just because of that alone, you know it's going to be warmer than normal next week. The thing that's a little tricky, though, is that it will be cool off to our northeast across the northeastern part of the U.S. That cool air will try to move in as the week progresses, but it will more than likely be unsuccessful just because the field of southerly winds is so large. But on top of that, the thing that really makes it a tricky forecast is that we have a couple of tropical waves of energy that move into the central U.S. around that system near Seattle. Once those reach the plains on the western Corn Belt next week, they break off the jet stream, and that causes them to wobble in a directionless manner. And whenever this happens, computer models break down, and they essentially become useless. They are telling us important information, and that is that we will have some waves of energy moving through the central U.S., but they're not very good at identifying exactly where or in what manner those systems are going to move. Because of that, you just have to broad brush everybody with about a half of an inch to an inch of rain next week, though we can see that higher totals will end up in the Dakotas nearest that intersection between energy and heat. And that's where we need some rain. The spring wheat belt is turning dry in both Canada and the United States. So that's something to watch. But again, rains are coming up more than likely for that area. In the Corn Belt, though, those rains are looking a little bit more scattered. And we need to keep an eye on temperatures, too, because July is an important month. And the warmer it is in July, the tougher it is to have really high yields. So we can see it's going to be warm to start out the month. Whether or not that lasts more than 5 to 10 days into the month is kind of the next set of questions we'll need to think about.
What's your overall assessment of the Corn Belt growing season thus far and how it sets us up for the month of July?
Well, we've been seeing rains here and there. So every time it looks like it's going to dry out a little bit, it rains. And then every time it looks like it's going to be really, really warm, we get some of those rains, and that keeps temperatures a little bit in check. But the problem going forward is that even with all of the rains that we've seen over the last 2, 3, 4 weeks, they've only been scattered, and they're more similar to what you would have seen or what you would expect to see in July and August, which is where you don't have these widespread, huge rain events. You just see scattered storms here and there, and that tends to accumulate and then make all corn and soybean producers happy because they've received the moisture that they need. But that's taking place early. We're seeing that in June, and that's leaving some dry pockets out there. And that's why this forecast going forward is probably a little bit more important than it has been in a while. One of the more interesting things, Todd, is that we can use our proprietary data here to track soil moisture. And every year since 2012, and even including the drought year of 2012, the coverage of 14-day topsoil dryness has diminished from June 15th through June 25th. That's in each of the last 8 years on the corn and the soybean crop. This is going to be the first year that didn't happen. Even with the rains that we saw over the last 2 weeks, the coverage of topsoil dryness actually increased a little bit and now hovers at just over 50% of both crops. So that just gives you a little bit of background information and showing you why some of these rains coming up are important and why even if we do get some decent rains over the next couple of days, we're going to need to see follow-up rains over the first third and half of July, or this story might be a little bit more interesting.
Hey, thanks so much, and we'll talk with you again next week about all of this. I appreciate it.
Yeah, sounds great. Looking forward to it.
Mike Tenura is with T-Storm Weather. He's in Chicago, Illinois. Matt Bennett is at agmarket.net. He's in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt. Thanks for being with us. Did you get all your spraying done?
Yeah, we're in pretty good shape there. We did have some river bottom stuff that we're hoping to get sprayed today. It's a little heavy. Been pretty fortunate on rainfall over the last week, so I'm not totally sure it's going to get sprayed, but if we lack it, we're only going to lack maybe 60, 70 acres. So, I don't know exactly what we're going to do there. We'll have to get creative, I guess. But bottom line is we're in pretty good shape. Things look good. Pretty excited, I guess, about our yield prospects anyway.
Yeah, I know here in Champaign, or at least in my home in Mahomet, Illinois, I picked up an inch and six tenths Saturday, an inch on Monday. Did you get rainfall out of those events?
Yeah, over the weekend we had anywhere from an inch and a half to 3 inches. So actually a little more than 3 inches home. So definitely had enough rain. We've actually got a little bit of water standing here and there, but Long story short, it looks pretty good. I'm not I really don't have anything to complain about whenever I look at my fields.
I thought this week in the marketplace would probably be all about the basis contracts and the pressure that might put on Chicago, certainly on the grain elevator system as we get, I guess, to the end of the week. Maybe people will have to make some kind of decision about whether they're going to roll them on old crop or go ahead and market them. However, it appears today there's more than just the basis contracts playing in Chicago.
Yeah, I think a couple of things are going on. Obviously, you've got this COVID-19 rearing its head again, and I think there's a lot of fear that it's going to, shut down, parts of the economy again. You see the ethanol grind. I mean, corn grind for ethanol up 8 weeks in a row, and yesterday at 91 million bushels. I mean, that's pretty impressive recovery that we've seen there, but. Is it going to stay around if we shut parts of the economies down? And I said, probably not. And so the other thing is the funds seem like they're selling with both hands today. And so, as far as corn's concerned, it looks like the funds feel very confident that right now we're sitting in a really good spot as far as what this crop size looks like here in 2020.
And next week, we'll of course get the grain stocks numbers and the acreage report. Start with that acreage report for me. What are your projections?
Well, I think we'll lose a few corn acres, probably right around that 95 is about where I would be. I can see the case for a little bit over that, and I can also see a case for underneath that. I've seen a lot of guesses, but got to think that we've lost a few corn acres, probably picked up 1.5 million bean acres, but I think your overall acreage is probably going to be off just a little bit due to the fact that a few acres didn't get planted up there in North Dakota.
And the grain stocks numbers are going to be really important. I don't know whether there are more animals eating longer or fewer animals in the pipeline. What do we think the indication will be from the grain stocks figures?
I think that you could get a bullish surprise there. I really do. I'm not saying that we're going to go wildly higher or anything like that's going to happen, but you look back to 2009 last year that we had a really wet crop that went into the bin, low test weight crop. That's kind of what we saw this last fall for the predominant majority of the Midwest. And so I've got to think that that low test weight is going to factor in, especially when we had so many animal units eating corn. DDGs were tougher to come by for some folks, and corn was the cheapest feed grain that we had in the world for quite some time here over the spring. So I'm not so sure that the disappearance won't be a pleasant surprise here next week.
What should farmers be considering this week?
Well, I think a couple of things. Moving forward, you've got to ask yourself if you really have good yield prospects, what kind of risk management might you want to put in place? Do you want to hedge clear down here? I know that there's a risk factor to it, but as you get more of a certainty about what kind of yields you're going to see, I think it probably makes sense to at least put a floor under some of this because. This could get kind of ugly, but I think before you get into harvest, especially if we print, maybe like a 180 in August, and I think that that certainly is something that we could be looking at. So I definitely want to understand kind of how this market could play out, make sure that I don't come in and get completely shocked by it either in August or across the scale.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Yep, absolutely.
Matt Bennett is with agmarket.net. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Monday afternoon. He's from Windsor, Illinois. Be sure to visit our website at willag.org. There you'll find Commodity Week. And this afternoon, by about 6 o'clock, you'll also find an updated version of Commodity Week that will include Matt Bennett. He'll be one of our panelists, along with Standard Grain's Joe Vaclavic and Chuck Shelby at Risk Management Commodities. Commodity Week, of course, is our weekly look at the marketplace, and we post it to the website on Thursday evenings. It airs on our home station on Friday afternoons and on many of these radio stations over the weekend. Check it out wherever you can. Commodity Week at willag.org or in your favorite podcast application. You have a great afternoon. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.